Hi, so I'm Yuan. I'm here to talk to you about some work we did on where we experimented with a new way to build storage functionality. First, I'd like to thank my co-authors, Bianca Schroeder, Greg O'Shea, and Ino Tereska. So in data centers today, applications are deployed inside containers or VMs running on top of OSs or hypervisors. Durable storage is typically virtualized and accessible via the network. And in such an environment, applications from IOs from applications pass through many different stages, including caches, file systems, dedupe layers, schedulers, etc. Collectively, we refer to all of these stages as the IO stack. However, paradoxically, despite all this functionality and stages, there's a surprisingly little amount of flexibility on the IO stack today. The stack is statically configured, and IOs are forced to flow through every single layer, and any sort of dynamic changes to the paths of IOs are impossible. For example, let's say we wish to change the replication protocol that we use in response to changes in the workload. Today, we would need to foresee this type of dynamic change and implement the functionality for it in the stack ahead of time, most likely with application cooperation. Or let's say we wish to suddenly selectively pass only some IOs through an entirely new stage that offers a new type of functionality, debugging or logging. Again, we would need to anticipate this and implement it in the stack in advance. So the bottom line is that anything that involves dynamically changing the path of IOs in the system is impossible today. This not only prevents various types of functionality, but it ultimately leads to an ossified IO stack that cannot be specialized or dynamically adapted to changes in the workload or client or provider needs. So in this work, we asked the following question. What if we could programmatically control the path of IOs at runtime? So this question didn't come out of the blue. In the last few years, there have been some very big changes to the way people and enterprises think about their systems and the functionality they provide. We've had a big shift away from closed proprietary functionality towards more programmability and control on top of commodity hardware in all parts of the data center infrastructure. So this trend has become the de facto standard for networks with the rise of software-defined networking in data centers, and we're slowly seeing this happening for storage as well under the umbrella of software-defined storage. So our work is inspired by these recent shifts in how systems are built. And on one particular observation, IO path changes are at the core of much of the functionality on the storage stack. For example, copy on write mechanisms route writes to a new location. Similarly, different replication protocols route IOs to different read and write sets based on consistency and latency requirements. So since routing is inherently programmable, our hypothesis when we started this work was that much of the specialized storage functionality in the IO stack could be replaced or enhanced by implementations that all leverage a common routing mechanism. As such, we define IO routing as the ability to dynamically control the path and destination of read and write operations at runtime. And we're going to route IOs using these storage switches, or S-switches. And control plane applications will then use IO routing to provide specialized data plane functionality in the IO stack. So let's see an example of how routing can be used to implement storage functionality. The example we'll consider is tail latency control. And as Eric Brewer talked about at length yesterday, this is a big problem in data centers today. So one cause of tail latency in data centers is overloaded storage servers who cannot absorb spikes in IO workload intensity. We'll see later that these spikes are very common in production environments, but for now, let's say we have VMs accessing a storage server S1. S1 is overwhelmed by incoming write traffic, so we wish to load balance incoming IOs by routing some of it to S2. Load balancing is very common for CPU and network resources, but storage traffic is different. An IO to an overloaded storage server S1 has to go to S1 since it changes state there, and subsequent IOs depend on those state changes. A mechanism that changes the route of an IO has to be mindful of these state changes and not violate the semantics of the storage stack. Such a mechanism also needs to ensure that configuration updates during path changes don't lead to instability, where IOs can flow through an incorrect path. And finally, with IO routing, reads and writes can be sent to different endpoints. Some functionality, like file versioning, can benefit from this type of flexibility, while other functionality requires reads to always return the latest writes to a particular location. So IO routing has to be mindful of these requirements and enforce the desired consistency guarantee. Finally, any metadata that we introduce into the system has to coexist with all the other metadata already existing. So we'll address these challenges throughout the talk, and we'll return to this example of tail latency control as it illustrates all of these challenges. But right now, I'd like to return to our definition of IO routing and see what does this actually mean for storage semantics. So to answer this question, we surveyed a large set of storage functionality And we distilled three types of I/O routing that are semantically appropriate for the I/O stack. And we'll look at each of them along with the type of functionality that they enable. In endpoint routing, IOs from a source P to a destination file X is routed to another destination file Y. Endpoint routing enables things like tail latency control, where IOs are routed to list loaded servers, copy on write, where IOs are routed to, where writes are routed to a new location, and file versioning, where IOs are routed to the right version. In waypoint routing, IOs from sources P and R to a file X are first routed through a specialized stage W before reaching their destination. Waypoint routing enables specialized processing, where IOs can be routed through a specialized stage or an appliance that provides things like fine-grained file cache customization or scheduling. And scatter routing, where IOs from P and R are routed to a set of replicas. So scatter routing provides a dynamic mechanism for choosing which endpoints to read from and write to. So this enables us to have programmable trade-offs between throughput and update propagation latency, as well as selectively routing some IOs for logging and debugging purposes. So to reiterate our original goal, because of the similarities between the surveyed storage functionality, our goal was to explore if and how we can implement an enhanced storage functionality by using a common programmable routing primitive. So to enable I/O routing in the storage stack, we designed and implemented sroute. In contrast to today's general purpose I/O stack, where IOs flow through a fixed set of stages, sroute consists of three components: specialized stages that take IOs as an input and can perform operations on their payload, S-switches on the data plane that change the route of IOs according to forwarding rules installed in them. S-switches are programmable through a simple API that we'll discuss shortly, and a logically centralized control plane that can inject specialized stages and S-switches at various points in the I/O stack and insert forwarding rules in them. Control applications then run on the centralized controller and program the data plane to implement the desired functionality. Our architecture makes use of end-to-end flow-based I/O classification. This means that at each stage in the I/O stack, an I/O can be identified as belonging to a particular flow that extends all the way from the source application inside the VM or the container, all the way to the storage backend. So this type of functionality is very standard in networks, but it hasn't been available in the storage stack until recently. So to use a flow-based classification, we extend the I/O flow architecture that was presented at SOSP in 2013. So let's take a look at how the routing mechanism actually works. S-switches forward IOs according to forwarding rules. For example, here we're routing all traffic from VM1 for file X on server S1 to file Y on server S2. At its simplest, the headers of incoming IOs are matched against the headers of the installed rules. And on the first successful match, a set of destinations is returned. The S-switch then forwards the IO to those destinations. Here are a few other examples in their associated forwarding rules. In this case, we route the same traffic through a specialized stage C instead. And finally, in this example, the last rule just routes the I/O headers for all the write operations from the VM1 to the controller instead. To install rules into S-switches, we use straightforward insert and delete calls. And our current implementation is of an S-switch is implemented partly in kernel and partly at user level. The kernel driver does file granularity partial I/O classification and forwarding within the same server. And to forward to a specialized stage or to a remote stage, the kernel driver will then do an upcall to a user level part that does sub-file range classification and forwarding. For files, a routing address corresponds to a remote host and a file name. If routing to a stage, the S-switch on the remote end will receive the incoming I/O and forward it to an appropriate stage, which is specified by a device name, driver, and altitude in that device driver stack, and forward it up to user level if the I/O is meant for a specialized stage. And finally, the controller has a very fixed and known address and is implemented at user level. Now let's look at something more complicated. So in the simple case, after an I/O matched against an installed rule, a set of destinations were returned. The S-switch then forwarded the I/O or its header to these locations. However, in some cases, S-switches can also execute an extra function F, which we call a control delegate, prior to returning a set of destinations. The delegate function's body is specified when the rule is installed and contains control plane logic that would otherwise reside at a centralized controller, but is distributed for control plane efficiency. So let's see why we need this and how we make use of it. Consider a slightly simpler version of our running example of tail latency control. The file X here resides on server S1, Load burst arrives at S1 caused by VM1 doing writes to file X. To alleviate this load burst, the controller decides to forward the load to a less busy server S2. So to do so, the controller inserts an S switch in VM1's hypervisor and inserts the following rules into it, specifying that writes should all be forwarded to S2, while read should still be forwarded to the old server, S1. But this application wants to read the latest version of the data, so this means that while we can still send reads to the original data to S1, any reads that follow a write to a block that was sent to S2 must also be sent to S2. So this means that the routing rules installed in the S switch itself need to change as write operations flow through the system. So it's a function of the workload. The simplest way to do this would be to forward all reads and writes to the controller for serialization and have the controller decide where to send every read. But of course, this would bottleneck the I/O stack on the controller. So instead, we distribute the control plane logic by using the delegate function F at the S switch. So to illustrate this, consider what happens when a write for the first 512K of data arrives. The delegate function F updates the rules at the S switch as follows. First, we delete the rule that sends all reads to S. Then we create a new rule that matches reads for the first 512K of X and route them to S2. Finally, the general rule that forwards all remaining read requests to S1 is inserted again. And since I/O header matching happens in the order in which the rules were installed, the last rule effectively serves as a catch-all for any byte ranges that didn't have explicit rules created for them. The control delegate creates similar rules for every subsequent write operation to ensure that reads always return the latest write. So this effectively distributes control plane functionality without bottlenecking the I/O stack at the controller. Well, let's tackle another important challenge that we highlighted earlier. How do we perform consistent rule updates? So path and endpoint changes require performing configuration changes while I/O is flowing through the system and could lead to instability. So this problem has been studied in the context of SDN networks, but the statefulness of storage traffic presents a very different set of challenges. So to address this problem, we define two consistency requirements that preserve the semantic properties of the storage stack, and we discuss them in order. So the basic problem of per I/O consistent updates arises when we wish to change the path of I/Os from an old one to a new one. The configuration changes in the S switches must not impact the path of I/Os in flight. More concretely, an I/O packet must follow the old set of rules or an updated set of rules, but not both. So the path switch has to be atomic. So to achieve this property, we introduce two more API calls in the S switches. Quies, which blocks and unblocks incoming I/O matching specific headers, and drain, which drains all pending I/Os downstream to durable storage. With these new API calls, to perform per I/O consistent path updates, we first quiesce at the S switch closest to the source, blocking all incoming I/Os until the path change is completed. Then we drain all I/O packets that are still in flight along the old path, make the path switch, and finally unblock the S switch, allowing the I/O to flow through the system again. Now, many applications require read after write consistency from their data. That is, reads have to return the latest data from the latest write. Rule updates have to preserve this type of data consistency and not cause instability in the system. So we'll call this per flow consistency. Now, there are several cases to consider for maintaining per flow consistency. If I/O traffic originates at a single source, per I/O consistency guarantees per flow consistency. So we follow the same approach where we quiesce at the S switch closest to the source, drain all I/O traffic in flight, make the path switch and unblock. If I/O traffic originates at multiple sources, we follow a very similar approach, but we perform the rule updates in phases. In the first phase, we quiesce and drain, make the path switch, and then we unblock. However, things are more complicated when we have multiple sources of I/O and control delegates are used, like in the tail latency control example that we saw earlier. The problem is that control delegates generate rules at S switches that have to be serialized with all the other routing rules in the system if we wish to maintain read-after-write consistency. So let's see how to handle this case by returning to our running example of tail latency control. So we still wish to route traffic that's overloading S1 to S2. And to maintain read-after-write consistency and avoid serializing rule updates at the controller, we place the control delegate at the S switch at VM1. That generated new rules and as I/Os flow to the system and serialized the rule updates there. But now we have a new VM2 that's also generating I/Os to VM1. So we could install another S-switch at VM2, but now the problem is that both of these S-switches are generating routing rules that need to be serialized in order to maintain per-flow consistency. So again, we could serialize these changes at the controller, or we could have the S-switches perform two-phase commit amongst each other, but these options would both be very expensive. So instead, the controller consults the topology of the data center and identifies S1 as the common stage among the I/O sources VM1 and VM2. And the controller inserts an S-switch at S1, serializing all the rule updates there and avoiding any controller involvement or any sort of distributed commit. So with this, I've concluded the design of S-Route at a high level, and I encourage you to read our paper for more details. So I'll move on to evaluation. Our paper contains more details about our implementation as well as our evaluation setup, but for the rest of the talk, I'll focus on control applications that we built as case studies to explore the power of this programmable routing primitive to implement storage functionality. So in the paper, we describe three types of control applications. The first makes use of scatter routing and provides programmable control over replication protocol's read and write sets, allowing them to be changed based on the current state of the workload or based on changes in the customer demands. And this allows us to trade off throughput for update propagation latency. In our experiments, we achieved a 63% throughput increase for our workload. The second use case makes use of waypoint routing and enables full disaggregation of a workload's file cache from its allocated VMs or container, as well as isolation between different workloads' caches and fine-grained customization of individual based on individual workloads' needs. Using this type of routing, we achieved a 57% throughput increase across all the workloads running on our system. And finally, we make use of endpoint routing to implement our running example of tail latency control, which I'll focus on in more detail for the rest of the talk. All of these case studies are evaluated using a combination of workloads, including a database running TPCE, as well as IO's traces collected from production environments, and I encourage you to read our paper for more details. So, like we heard yesterday, tail latency in data centers can lead to application unresponsiveness and be orders of magnitude higher than average latency. One of the reasons for this is that IOs often arrive in bursts, and here we see an exchange trace collected from a Microsoft Enterprise data center, and we see that the difference in load between the most loaded server, marked as max here, and the least loaded server, marked as min, is over two orders of magnitude and lasts for longer than 15 minutes. So our control application addresses the tail latency problem for storage traffic by temporarily offloading, forwarding IOs from the most loaded server, marked as max here, to the least loaded server, marked as min, while maintaining read-after-write consistency. The control application attempts to balance queue sizes across all the storage servers, and to do so, the controller maintains two running averages. Average hour, which is the average over the request rate in the last hour, and average minute, which is a sliding window over the request rate in the last minute. The controller then decides to temporarily offload I/O if the average over the last minute is greater than over the last hour by some configurable parameter alpha. To route traffic to S-min, the controller installs an S-switch at S-max that forwards all writes to S-min while still serving reads from S-max. Of course, to maintain read-after-write consistency, a control delegate updates the rules in S-switch as writes flow through the system, like we discussed previously. So to evaluate the performance benefits, we'll look at the I/O latencies for the overloaded max volume. On the x-axis here, we see the latency of I/Os in milliseconds, and on the y-axis, we see the number of I/Os that incurred that latency. This is the baseline performance that shows the latencies for the flow when all I/O requests are sent to the max volume. Here we see that 50% of requests incur more than 20-second latencies since the max volume is overloaded. And this is the performance after we route traffic with S-route. So here we see that 90% of requests now incur less than 20-millisecond latencies. So overall, we obtained orders of magnitude reductions in I/O latencies by using S-route. And I encourage you to read our paper for our other case studies. So in conclusion, in this work, we asked the question, what if we could programmatically control the path of IOs at runtime? Our observation was that path changes are at the core of much of the functionality in the data center IO stack, so we designed and implemented a programmable routing primitive for the storage stack, casting storage functionality as control plane applications that leverage this common routing primitive. Along the way, we had to solve a number of challenges introduced in part by the statefulness of storage traffic in contrast to networking, as well as maintaining data and metadata consistency and performing consistent rule updates. Finally, we explored the power of the approach in three case studies that leverage different types of I/O routing to enable dynamic programmable control over a workload's replica set, file cache, and tail latency. And I encourage you to read our paper for more details, and I'd be happy to take any questions. Let's thank the speaker.
Hello, Luis Pamias from Western Digital. Very nice work. My question is, losing one of these switches, can it lead to loss of data, or do you need to store redundantly the rules?
Using switches, you're asking basically about failures.
Correct.
Right, so we discussed failures in the paper. I didn't have enough time to cover them here. So for S-switches, there is no lost data. If you're not using control delegates, all the rule updates are serialized at the controller, basically. So the controller persists the rule updates before installing them in the S-switch. If control delegates are used, what we do is we prepend the routing rules to IOs that are sent to the remote machine. If a failure happens when the controller comes back up, it will resume, it knows which machine the IOs got offloaded to, and it will retrieve the routing rules from there.
And another short question is, can the number of rules grow exponentially, or do you have any mechanisms to compact it?
So the number of rules can grow, but obviously if you have adjacent byte ranges, you can compact the rules, and for that you can use something like a splay tree.
Hong Tan from Alibaba. So hi. Very interesting work. I have a question that it seems that the routing is done at the device level, but what if there's a distributed system that platform level also does its own replication, et cetera, how would you handle that? Say, for example, it already has this pixel space, the replication, and how would you be aware of this when you do this, say, in your last example, doing this tail latency reduction?
So you're asking if replication happens at application layer above.
Right. Suppose Exchange Server already does its own, say, pixel space replication. It does really replicate.
Right. So what our approach doesn't involve any application changes. So we maintain the same system semantics as the system that the application expects, basically, from the system.
Let me elaborate a little bit. Say, for example, you decided to change the routing from S1 to S2. While the application also seems to understand that the three replicas would be S1, S3, and S4. So
right.
That somehow it has to have the knowledge that the replica group has been changed.
Right. So we're not, in some sense, we're, if the application wishes to do a replication at control at a layer above, then it can continue to do so and will provide the same semantics. What we were looking at was basically a way to change the replication protocol to use our primitive. So if we perform replication underneath the application, obviously we'll maintain the same system semantics, but the application won't be aware that we're doing it. That being said, if the application wishes, we can provide the same functionality basically without application involvement.
Let's talk at
the poster session.
Hi, this is Chi from Two Signal Investment. The first question I have is, I was under the impression that this is kind of optimization mainly for write or read-write mixed load. So for those write once and read multiple times system, do you have benchmarks for this?
For which systems?
For write once and read multiple times. Like many read loads.
So what you're talking about write once, read many times workloads?
Yes.
So one of our case studies, for example, shows what happens when you adapt the replication set for during read-only phases. You can increase throughput significantly in those cases. Our workloads are currently our database workloads, TPCE, and enterprise traces. I'm not sure specifically which workload you're referring to. So we can
talk about
we can talk more, yes. Yeah.